To Jesse's left, we have Dori Shafrir, and she's an executive editor over at BuzzFeed. Do you have anything to add, Dori?
No, that's about it.
Okay. And to Dori's left, we have Adam Frucci, who's the editor of Splitsider. Do you have anything to add?
Nope, that's accurate.
Perfect. And Sam Reich from College Humor could not make it due to a family matter, but it's fine. We're all going to be fine. It's going to be a fun time.
One second.
I just want to make a quick announcement. Can everybody scoot in so that empty seats, we can fill it? Because it's going to be standing room only.
Damn
Thank
right.
You.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, I think we're lit. Are we lit?
No, we're not lit.
Yep.
But we're so pretty.
I know.
They should know.
We'll see. But
that's... Are we good? We adjusted?
Oh. Whoa. Maybe we should do the intros again now that they know what we look like.
Now that you can see us as well as hear us. All right.
Nope.
This is a rave, I forgot to tell you.
We're only going to light the crowd.
Can someone give me a thumbs up?
I think
when
that's
this
fine.
Is, set?
Is that good for everybody? All right. Yeah. This is...
I'm going to hold on.
Wait, one
this
more
is
time.
Like a bit.
Oh, okay. All right. This is a sketch, guys. Trying it out. Okay. We're going to dive right into this, I guess. What do you guys see, this is for everybody, as the main difference between the way your site talks about and generates comedy versus traditional media, like a magazine, a newspaper, or the news? Like, how do you, what's your approach, and how is it different than something that might be, have a longer period from when it's written to when it airs or goes up?
I think... I just cover it a lot more closely than any traditional media. That's kind of why I wanted to start the site, is there's not a lot of venues out there that are specifically about comedy. There are entertainment sites, but I just feel like a lot of people are interested in comedy who don't want to read Top Chef recaps or True Blood recaps. So, you know,
right.
It's a little too broad. Just TV isn't something that somebody's not like, I'm interested in TV. It's like, no, you're interested in certain types of TV. So I just try to cover that specific genre and kind of cut out the rest of it. So
yeah.
If you're really into comedy, you can just come there and find out the news every day and read about, you know, features about comedy without having to sift through stuff that you might not be as interested in.
All right. And do you think, I feel like people come to the internet more in term because it's a niche. Like, people aren't coming to see a picture of Tina Fey on 30 Rock. They want to have geek out with people a little more, and I feel like the internet lends itself to that.
But they might want to see an animated GIF of Tina Fey.
Absolutely, a GIF wall with a joke and a caption. Back in the green room, we were talking a little bit about a boob base. Jesse, do you want to explain boob bases?
Sure. So it's a theory that I invented when we were talking, but it's kind of based on College Humor. If you followed it earlier, College Humor was kind of a site to see college girls' boobs and people with dicks drawn on their faces. But now it's not that. It's still there. I checked for this panel, and you can still find that stuff. And I can't speak to their traffic patterns, but you imagine their base was that, and that's how they'd be able to sustain their new model, which is creating original content. And I think at this point, with every website having its own niche, they all have that base. And I think all the sites we write for have that, of it's not necessarily all boobs, but I think you could both speak to the sites that you work for, that they have their own thing, their own boob base.
And so my question is, what are your site's boob bases?
Cat boobs?
I say really servicey things, like guides, like a guide to every season of SNL when it got added to Netflix, so you could all right, what's the interesting thing from season 16? That kind of thing does really well and is, kind of catnip for getting passed around.
No, but seriously, we did a post recently that was, I think it was 20 cats as fonts, and it was hilarious and really popular, and I think that that's in some ways the ideal BuzzFeed post. It takes cats, which we all know and love, and fonts, which is another thing that people love on the internet, and it kind of united them together. And it was a really funny post, but it was also smart in a way because you had to sort of be a font geek to get it. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of the comedy that works online has that kind of knowing wink.
Absolutely. And Jesse, in terms of what you write, what do you think, like, you do specific stuff like recapping for a show, but is there something that you feel like does well no matter what site you're writing it for or what format it is?
I guess my personal boob base of what I've been able to do is, so I make infographics for a lot of people that are, I do it for Splitsider, and I do it for Juicy, and I do it for Vulture, and it was a thing that once I did it the first time, it immediately took off like nothing else I've ever done, because it's visual and it's humory, but it's definitely something that doesn't make sense in any other medium other than the internet, because it's so single-serving and so fast. And I think, I mean, I do it for Splitsider. I recap 30 Rock in terms of graphs and stuff, and it's something that no one else has done, and people who like it really like it, and people who don't like it definitely don't get it at all, but it is the thing that I've been able to carve out that's like, oh, this is a thing I can do, and it's a way of communicating kind of my perspective on how to, you know, tell stories or convey an opinion or convey a sense of humor on the internet.
And would you say that's changed the way you watch TV? Like, trying to think of things in terms of graphs, or how is this going to be an infographic?
Yeah, I think it's basically every joke I see, I try to think of, like, how would I break it down or how would I add something to it. It's not, I mean, it helped that that's kind of how my brain worked anyway, where I break things down into segments, which is kind of why I started doing it. But I think it definitely, I think it, for my friends, at least I know, because I haven't spoken to the people who read the column, but they can see where they think I'm going to take it. Like, they know what jokes will work. And for 30 Rock, it really works. There's just kind of the non sequiturs, or there's punchlines that are so irreverent you can kind of just repackage it and stuff.
It's also next to impossible to recap 30 Rock in a normal way. It's like, and then there were all these jokes, and Tina Fey was hilarious. That's the recap. And it's like, all right, I watched it too. So it's fun to put a spin on it to give it another, you know, element.
And Dory, that kind of plays in a little bit to what BuzzFeed does in terms of memes, in terms of taking the content but letting people readjust it. Like, I know you guys recently added a feature where if you're making a post, when you guys report on a meme, you also added a tool in where your readers can then make their own and then add it in the comments, which makes it a lot more interactive and also grows the joke. And what do you think that kind of interactivity does for the joke in terms of, like, how long it lasts or how fast it spreads or, like, what kind of people see it?
So during the Oscars, we immediately seized upon this meme of Angelina Jolie's right leg, and it became like this whole thing. And one of the posts we did, we just called it leg bombing, and we put her leg into other, like, out of context photos, and then we had this tool at the bottom of the page where people could upload their own photos and then put Angie's leg into their own photos, and it just took off, and it definitely prolonged the life of the joke. Like, as of a few days ago, people were still contributing photos, and I mean, the Oscars were what, February?
Weeks ago.
Yeah, weeks ago.
Which is forever in
March,
the internet.
March 6th, I forget when they were. No, March 6th was last week. I forget when they were. I think also one of the nice things about kind of this idea of doing comedy online is then it becomes much more collaborative, and you're working with your audience to make something funnier instead of just the traditional model of the comic being sort of removed from their audience and they're the ones in charge of the joke, and we're sort of letting our audience also be in charge of the joke.
Yeah, and it gives people a lens to look at, like, spot a funny thing but then also apply it to their own lives. Like, you see with memes, it's not just people on the internet using memes anymore. It's not just, like, the geekiest person you know who's like, why, you know, give me a tip. It's There were those college groups, I don't know if you guys saw on Facebook, popping up maybe 2 weeks ago, where like every college and university in the United States had a Facebook group that was like Fordham memes, like University of Nebraska memes, and it was applying all of these kind of formulaic internet jokey things to dining hall etiquette, or oh my god, the computer lab's always closed, or like why is that one professor the worst? And I think that's something BuzzFeed does really well in helping to perpetuate that, like the jokes that you're telling on the internet or reading on the internet or participating in on the internet are feeding back out into people's lives, and it's not just people who you would think are like computery. It's helping to dictate culture.
Yes, leg bombing changed people.
Yeah, the world forever.
Yes. So, I mean, I guess my question on that is, did you, I mean, you don't have to say if you found that funny or not, but I mean, do you see, is BuzzFeed's job to kind of step back and say we're not necessarily going to curate what the internet is finding funny as much as we're going to let the internet be as funny as it can and give it kind of an infrastructure to like kind of explode it? I mean, I think BuzzFeed is a kind of a place where like you'll have a nascent meme that'll kind of grow, and then BuzzFeed is a way to kind of, especially if you have it where you have a generator inside of it. You think BuzzFeed's partly there to feed the internet more than curate it?
I think we do both. I mean, I think that we curated this idea of Angie's right leg. Mm-hmm. We did. You know, no one, there wasn't another site that was immediately saying, this is funny. Yeah. She's struck this, because it started with a post that we did that was just the 10, I think it was something like the 10 best photos of Angie's right leg from tonight. And there were 10 different photos of her at different times at the Oscars where she was striking the exact same pose with her right leg, like stuck, like basically her entire right leg stuck out through her dress. And then the comedian, the guy who wrote the
Jim Rash.
Yeah, Jim Rash mocked her on stage and struck the pose. So it had sort of already become a meme like over the course of the evening. And that was our last photo in that post. So we were already kind of saying, this is funny. And then the leg bombing post where you could upload your own photo was something we did kind of towards the end of the evening. So I think you could say that we both curated and like moved the meme forward.
Mm-hmm.
But also like gamified watching TV a little bit, because you're sitting and watching this thing that you know millions of people around the world are watching with you, and it's not just spot the funny thing, but what can you do with this funny thing? How can you make this something that other people are going to relate to or look at? And it makes it more of a game.
I mean, it was Sunday night, right? Just that alone is very different than any old media thing that ever existed. I mean, no one was releasing newspapers that only existed Sunday night. Or you reported as it was going on. I mean, I remember, like, everyone was live tweeting in, and then there was just a Twitter account for Angelina Jolie's leg that followed, because there was first a Jennifer Lopez nipple Twitter account, and I guess they, like, interacted, and then it immediately was a thing they were able to cover. Where that is, I mean, that is only the internet. That can only exist.
It's true.
But I do think that there is a difference between, I don't know, not to sound like old or snobby, but a difference between humor and comedy. Like, I don't cover memes on Splitsider. I cover, you know, TV, web videos, movies, things that are, like, made explicitly from the beginning with the idea of it being a comedic product. Well, I think memes, taking things, putting them in different contexts, it's, like, a different thing. And it's definitely very specific to the internet. But I do think there's, like, a sizable difference between, you know, a TV show or even, you know, like a college humor web video and memes. You know, it's like a more unique to the internet, but I guess because it's more malleable and more people can get in on it, it doesn't have like a single source. It feels like a completely different thing to me. Yep.
Well, do you think there's TV shows that we cover that are more, that they function in a way that's comparable to how memes function? I mean, they are, they're not user-generated. I mean, and someone wrote the show and someone created the show.
The writers of shows are also very aware that people are watching with the intent of live blogging, live tweeting. Community does that. Jim Rash, accepting that award, knew that when he struck that pose, that was going to be a thing.
Yeah,
but
Dan Harmon has said that he shoots things and looking for people to make animated GIFs out of them. Like,
exactly.
When they're shooting, it's like, oh man, this is going to be a sweet GIF on Tumblr.
Because they know that that's where their fans are going to be freaking out, and they want the community's full of Easter eggs that, like, they know are going to be a thing.
But
so,
I guess, is that the difference? Is one is... one's more reactive than the other? Like, one is created just in a one-way direction, and the other, like, memes are more, I guess, democratic, more reactive, where it can change over time. Well, something that's just produced, it's produced and it's put out, and then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to, like, mess with it. You're not going to, like, re-edit a community episode.
Right.
But you can make a GIF, and then that can, you know, be its own thing.
And they're interacting with each other. Like,
yeah.
They're aware of each other. That's what's nuts. Adam, in terms of Split Side, are you guys do cover, like, obviously, like, TV recaps, what's happening this week in comedy, but you also get the opportunity or take the opportunity to go back and look at kind of older stuff. I know on your page right now there's a feature on Bob and Ray,
yep.
Which is like a comedy duo from the 50s. The photo's black and white. I know on the Huffington Post, like, we don't run black and white photos very often.
Yeah, do you guys have, like, the thing? Like, no black and white photos.
Well,
it kills traffic.
It's
good to know.
It's a thing. Black and white photos statistically don't click as well on the internet. So if you have a color photo, your piece does better. And it's not that we wouldn't write about an older thing. It's that we wouldn't have...
you would color it in.
Yeah. We'd, like, go and draw something and, like, draw some stuff on it. But my question for you is, do you think you're more willing to do that because you're on the internet? Do you think there's more of an audience for that because you're on the internet and because people are coming to your site?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of stuff that is older from, you know, before the 90s that you can really put into context based on what you see today, like that Bob and Ray thing. Like, that's Bob Elliott, who is Chris Elliott's dad and Abby mm-hmm. Elliott's grandfather. And it's like, to see that in context, I think, is really interesting. If you're interested in comedy, to get that whole story as opposed to just being, what happened this week? Like, there's a lot of amazing stuff that came out in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s that somebody who's 19 years old and just got into Parks and Rec and wants to know more about comedy or, like, discover more stuff, I think it's cool to be able to dig stuff up and put it in that context and make it easy to discover. Yep.
Yep. Yep. Sorry.
And when you created Split Sider, did you think that you're going to have this many people who knew this much about old comedy?
No, it was surprising. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we put that stuff up because people are interested in it. Like, people comment on it and they are excited to see it. Like, oh man, yeah, like, my dad had this stuff on VHS when I was growing up and I only saw a few episodes or whatever, and people get excited because it's not something that's written about or talked about that much online. There's that immediacy that is kind of what the internet demands, but it's cool to look back a little bit.
I mean, I think it to that point, there's just comedy was never covered for the most part for, I don't know how to say comedy, for 100 years. I mean, like, so there's a zillion stories that are never, ever told. I mean,
and
everyone knows who the biggest comedians are.
Yeah, and that Bob and Ray thing is part of a column where a guy goes to the Paley Center in New York. There are two of them in New York and L.A., and that stuff's only available there. Like, you can't really find it elsewhere. So it's really digging up stuff from archives that is inaccessible and, like, making it more accessible. You know, if you don't live in New York or L.A. and don't feel like going to the Paley Center once a week and watching old TV.
Paley Center is awesome.
No, it's amazing. We're agreed on that.
Yes. And even though Sam's not here, I think we'd be remiss not to touch upon College Humor and Funny or Die, at least in terms of, like, original content and how those two sites in particular are taking platforms for original internet humor and comedy and growing them into more mainstream businesses, where now both of them are branching out into full-length feature films. College Humor has a movie coming out starring Ben Schwartz, who is Jean Ralphio from Parks and Rec. And Funny or Die has Casa de Mi Padre, which actually has a screening here at South By, starring Will Ferrell. And I guess I wanted... taking into account stuff like Louis C.K.'s album release, his past album release, where he filmed, edited, did all of the production end of his last comedy special and album on his own, then released the album himself via his website and basically told his fans, like, I'm trusting you to pay $5 for this. Cut out the middlemen of all of, you know, a record company or DVD companies that would have taken a cut out of A, his vision, but B, like the business end of things. And he ended up making millions of dollars. The business plan worked of just going through the internet, sending people a file that had his special in it. And now Jim Gaffigan's following suit. He's doing the same thing. His next special, his next album are being released the same way. So seeing that those instances of comedy are relying more on the internet, trusting people on the internet more, and pairing that with internet comedy sites now branching out into mainstream media, what do you guys make of that blurring? Like, where do you think that's moving towards in terms of those companies that used to be involved in the selling of things that are now, they seem to be getting cut out because artists or comedians want it to be more democratic, want it to be more of an interaction between themselves and their audience?
I think that the comedy world now is kind of where the music world was maybe 10 years ago, where there's less need for middleman and the internet has made it easier for more people to get their stuff heard or seen. And I don't think it's going to become the case that every stand-up releases their special direct. It's kind of like when Radiohead did it. It's like, yeah, the Radiohead. People are going to buy that album. It's like, yeah, Louis C.K. is the best and most popular stand-up on the planet right now. People are going to buy his special. But somebody who is an unknown is still going to need to get on their half-hour special on Comedy Central and then work their way up and kind of get exposure through traditional means. But it is interesting for more established artists, you know, just like more established bands are doing that. Once you get to that certain level, you don't really need a record label. You don't really need, you know, HBO or Comedy Central or a distribution deal, because you can just kind of connect directly. But you still need help kind of getting up to that level, I think.
Yeah, so you need HBO or Comedy Central first, just like most, I would say most of these bands need the major label deal. And, you know, there are exceptions, like Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah, for example, but Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah sold their first album by themselves without a middleman, but I think, and sold like over 100,000 copies or something. But that, I think, is really the exception. I think, you know, most bands or comedians starting out who try to go without the middleman, it's tough.
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of work. Just generally, and I think Louis has the advantage of having enough money that he can pay some people to do the work, and he's also a crazy person who, like, is willing to write, direct, edit every single thing he does, where a lot of comedians don't have that infrastructure, just like a lot of musicians. It will be interesting seeing what Gaffigan does, if it's as popular, because I think there's something about the first one who does it. So everyone wants to be part of the first, and the internet wants to say, we did it, like, we supported this thing, the internet wins, like, go away, television. But, like, that can only last so long. And, I mean, and there still needs to be someone. I think Ben Schwartz is an interesting example because he came up through UCB and that was it. But, he became bigger a lot through web video. I mean,
yeah.
And he wasn't a nobody. I mean, during this entire time, I worked at a talent agency that he did, so I know he had major representation. But, like, through College Humor videos, through his own videos, he became a person the internet already was prepared to embrace. But I mean, you wouldn't know him if he wasn't a guy who moved to LA and had those meetings where he was able to get on Parks and Rec. I mean, like, there, it definitely could speed you up, and I think there's a lot of people who have been able to use the internet to become to those media channels. But at the end of the day, television makes a lot more money than the internet does. Movies make a lot more money than television does. And it's good to say, like, oh, it's happening any minute now, but, like, we're still a few years away. I mean, a small example is we all think everyone loves Arrested Development at this point because it's so popular on the internet. But even when we're like, oh, it's going to come back, Fox still didn't pay for it. No major network still paid for it. It still is going to be on Netflix. I mean, there is... The internet is good because it'll... If you're the internet's friend, then they will help you out. But I think they also have this overinflated idea of how important things are. So you have a show like... You know, you can't believe that Arrested Development is the greatest show ever, and you think, oh, if it's going to come back, then everyone's going to give them $1 zillion, where it still doesn't have that ad base or even Community. People are so surprised that Community isn't the top-rated show on television. Where it's, the reason it is so popular is it's so niche. It's the most niche show I can imagine ever to be on network television. And that's why it has the internet base. And I think, I mean, what we're hoping is that someone figures out a way to monetize that enough where you can have Community get only 1.5 million people watching it live, but they have a way to monetize, you know, web videos enough that that show can stay on the air.
And that's what cable is good for. Like, cable's the middleman between network and the internet. You still have that curator. You need a curator. Nobody, or there are a few, very few people who are excited to watch 100 web videos in order to find the 3 funny ones. So you need to have that gatekeeper who is like, okay, let's get rid of the crap and put the funny stuff up. And that's what cable does. And they don't need a huge audience. Like, you have Portlandia is like a big hit, but it doesn't have many viewers. Or like Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Louie. Like, all these shows that the internet's like, well, these are the best shows on TV. Like, they collectively get, like, 15 million viewers, and that's less than 2.5 Men gets every week.
Yeah.
But it's nice, like, cable to not have those high needs of viewership, and they can kind of give Louis $100,000 an episode when he makes an episode, and that doesn't take very much for them to pay back.
One sec.
Sure. I
feel like there is a overlap in that Venn diagram that they're about to reach, though, possibly, where you have the people who are coming up through web at the same time. It'll be interesting, I think, to see how Jim Gaffigan's album ends up doing, because I think his audience does skew a little older, and I think he's also less of a cause on the internet. There are tons of kind of Louis C.K. fandoms, both for the show, for the stand-up. There are GIFs all over the place of his jokes. And Jim doesn't really have that same internet appeal. Do you think that if Jim's album or special doesn't go over as well, that would be a trend that would die, that it's just going to die with Louis? People wouldn't, like, release directly anymore?
I think people will still do it. It's easy to overlook the fact that Louis paid $250,000 of his own money to produce this thing. It's not like, oh boy, well, I'll just shoot this with a webcam and upload it to the internet. It's like, he invested a ton of money, and
yeah,
it's like, more people will try it, but it's never going to be, or not for a long time, it's not going to be like a thing that everybody does. You know, I do think more comedians will try it, especially ones that are more popular on the internet, like Aziz Ansari and people like that. I think we'll see them really heading right for it. But it'll be interesting to see how Gaffigan does.
Well, I think in that there is the question of, like, what the internet finds funny, and there's definitely people that the internet finds funny. There's stand-up comedians that are popular. There's the shows that we cover. And there's a variety of reasons. Like, Louis is a show that every single website covers. But, I mean, no one covered My Boys when Jim Gaffigan was on it. Or, you know, if Aziz did a special, be fine. Or if Donald Glover did. But if, you know, an equal level comedian, if they did it. I mean, even, I'm trying to think of another comedian who's at that same level, but is not internet popular. I don't know. Do you have, I'm trying to think of any.
You're on your own, man.
I know, there's nobody. But there's the things. There's the shows that people watch that you can do. Like, there's probably a list of 10 things that are the most popular shows on the internet. And Louis is one of those shows, and Louis can do that. Jim Gaffigan is not necessarily that person. So maybe, I mean, he has his fans.
So what do you think makes a show or a comedian that appeals to the internet?
Well, I mean, there's a couple things. I mean, I think Community does, because it is the show itself is the most internet friendly in how much it interacts with the internet. Just like, you know, bands that interacted a lot with the internet became really popular because they can continuously create content. And I think probably Community is the only show on television where every cast member other than Chevy is on Twitter, and the showrunner's on Twitter, and he talks about the show. I mean, that's something that always happened in music. If you're in a band that constantly released mixtapes or constantly released singles, you got more coverage on those media channels. You kind of became friends because there's a symbiotic relationship. And I think Community does a better job than almost anyone propagating it. And I think probably Parks and Rec does the second best job, and they also probably have the second most people.
I also think that people on the internet really like shows that make them feel smart and savvy.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you can't start Community with the My Dinner with Andre episode. You know, you can, you know, like, stuff that you can't get into immediately And therefore, you feel like you're in on something cool and secret or, like, underground, and then you can, like, have bragging rights for being into this cool thing, as opposed to, you know, Big Bang Theory, where you can sit down halfway through any episode and you'll get it, and it's straightforward and it's a lower barrier to entry. So I guess kind of the cred that you get for being into, like, a smaller show that it's maybe harder to pick up.
Well, I guess there's also no reason for you to brag about liking really popular shows. I mean, like, everyone, if 15 million people watch Big Bang Theory, you're not going to, you know, say you're not presenting your unique self by saying, oh, I watch Big Bang Theory as well. That doesn't tell anyone about you. It's, I forgot what it was. There's some study that says this generation is not using culture to separate themselves. They're just kind of creating, they're defining themselves by it, and they're saying what makes most sense by them. So to say something that is as broad as possible doesn't make sense. Where the internet is, you're projecting your ideal self, and your ideal self is going to like the smartest television shows, and you're going to talk about those shows the most. And then, because the internet is somewhat of an echo chamber, that thing continues. So then, you know, and it gets the traffic. So if you draw the community characters dressed up like Batman figures or Star Wars figures, then that's going to keep on being posted. And we'll post it, and BuzzFeed will post it, and Huffington Post will post it, because people are going to click on it, and then when people click on it, they keep on doing it. And then that's how the internet thinks community is the most popular show on television, where it's the most internet talked about show on television.
Also, I think the internet rewards intensity of fans, and TV ratings, you know, don't. So this small group of community fans can create this outsized impression on the internet about the popularity of the show.
Hey, how can they cancel a show that's got 1,500 likes on Tumblr?
Yeah.
But I think the television industry is trying to figure out how they can do it. I mean, there's a show like Mad Men, which is not a comedy for the most part, but the model that they propagate, that they say works, but I'm pretty sure it actually hasn't. But if you get a show that everyone talks about, it doesn't matter if not that many people watch it, you can sell higher esteem, more expensive advertising. So you won't get as many dollars because the views, but you'll get it because, oh, you want to be associated with that brand. But from what I understand, that hasn't necessarily worked for AMC. So that is something that people have yet to really figure out. It's like, what does it mean to have better, I think, brand penetration is what it's called. And no one has figured out a way to make money off of it, but, like, we all really like it. I mean, the internet likes that these shows exist, and they will continue to, but, you know, it hasn't figured out a way to make it. So that's the rule, not the exception.
Well, there's something about a show not being, like, the possibility of a show failing or being canceled being difficult to monetize on, that feeds fandom, that you all need to come together to kind of save this thing, or that people don't understand it.
Yeah, the internet loves a cause. I don't know if you guys heard about this Coney thing.
Fellow.
But yeah, the internet loves rallying behind what they consider the underdog, or like the, you know, the networks are evil and it's the suits are trying to kill the art, so we got to get behind them, and then we'll show how powerful we are by getting it back on the air, you know.
Yes.
It's true.
Yep.
Sure. Absolutely. Give me a sec. Sorry, I have a bullet list. I'm new here. Where do you guys find your content online? Where online are you going to find stuff that maybe hasn't been clicked on a lot yet, or doesn't have a ton of views yet? Where do you go to find?
I feel like that's where do you get your ideas? I mean, it's the internet.
Well, like, how do you find stuff?
Everywhere.
Where, like, are you on Twitter, like, waiting for someone to be like, hey, look at this? Or, like, do you find communities like Tumblr or 4chan or something like that interesting, where people are kind of going geeking out, but then also things might be getting made conversationally in the process, or even a BuzzFeed?
I mean, I think part of it is, yes, finding this stuff, whether it's on Twitter or Tumblr or someone sending a link or whatever. But I think what we try to do at BuzzFeed is not just replicate what other people are doing and just reproduce what other people are doing. Like, we're not an aggregator. Like, we want to make our own stuff. So it's more, you know, it is like, where do you get your ideas? It's, you know, it's riffing off something that's already out there and not just saying, here's a funny link. Like, that's kind of boring.
Yeah. So you were going to say something.
Oh, so then, I mean, you're almost, in a way, you are saying you are the people that, in a way, you are a single entity that's creating kind of what the internet is also doing. You're riffing on it, but then when you do it, because you have more focused traffic than the internet as a whole. So, I mean, how did you then realize when something gets out of your hand, do you then re-report on it, or do you keep on building on it? Or it's like you put it out into the world and then it's the internet's job to build it. I mean, is it a continuously interactive process?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, yeah.
Well, where do you do it? Don't you do this? You aggregate things.
Yeah. Where do you find stuff? I mean, mostly through blogs. I think what's really interesting is there are a lot of blogs out there that are doing more or less the same thing. And the game is always finding, where's the jumping off point from this? Or, like, where's the trend in this? Where's the joke in this? Sort of the same way, I guess, how you would approach watching TV, where it's, you know, how is this applying to something bigger than just this one? Like, with the Huffington Post, when we find a viral video, it's not necessarily just writing up like, oh, here is, you know, this one instance of this one funny thing, but finding the trend and then making a slideshow out of it, or saying where are 15 other instances of that, like the 15 best blah.
When does it reach a point where you guys cover it? Is it just like an instinct of like, this is going to work? Or is it an instinct of this has 10 of them? Or, I mean, is it just something where it's this person where like, I find this funny, or I think, I mean, where's that point where you're,
I think them? Part of it is like, yeah, is this personally funny? Would I click on this if I saw this somewhere? But also, you know, we know our boob base, we know like, okay, people really love a certain thing. If like, people love cat videos, people love people not doing things well, or people doing things stupidly. So if you can find a way to take that joke and apply it more broadly, it applies the meme, I think, or to create like a thought meme almost of like, how can you then go out into the rest of the internet and come back and find those same things.
So how much of it is confirming your base and how much of it is trying to do different? I mean, that's probably something that, you know, all of you guys can answer of what is, we need to like knock out these 10% of things that we expect, and we also need to do this 90% or whatever. Like, what would you say the breakdown is of building your base and then not, you know, creating new things that are nothing related to your, you know, your cats wearing t-shirts or whatever? Not saying that anyone has done that, but if you did do a cat wearing t-shirt, I probably would click on it. Anybody?
I don't know. I feel like I just, if I think something's funny, then I'll post it. I mean, I don't post a ton of just straight-up videos. We have like a roundup at the end of the week, but it's not like our bread and butter isn't just reposting videos. So, you know, I go to the major sites, Funny or Die, College Humor, UCB Comedy, and then stuff gets emailed in, see stuff on Tumblr, but it's not like a big cornerstone of the site. So I don't have like, well, I got to hit this demo or, you know, this type of video. It's just like, well, if something's funny and I don't think people have seen it, or if it's just like, this is a funny thing, people would like to see it, then I just put, you know, I guess that's a very simple way of doing it.
Is it funny?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have like quotas of, you know, cat videos. Mm-hmm.
But like, how do you decide what's a good cat video, or like, what, like, why this cat video and not another? You know what I mean?
I mean, it's like, it's that whole pornography thing. Like, you know it when you see it. Like, it's just, a funny cat video is a funny cat video. There's certain elements I think that will make it funnier than others. Like, I'm personally obsessed with the whole, like, cats versus printers genre of video on YouTube, because that's funny. It's like a cat, an animal, interacting with technology. And so I think that that's inherently amusing. But things are just, you know, things are funny. But I think that that...
Do you think that the internet has, like, a different sense of humor? Like, things that you laugh at on the internet aren't necessarily things that you would mention as funny, maybe, to someone else. Like, if you saw that in IRL, if you saw, like, a cat at a printer, like, you'd be like, okay, whatever. But, like, I don't think you would go home later and, like, tell people about it necessarily.
And do you see that big a difference between the real world and the internet? Like, funny is funny. If something's funny, it's funny on the internet. It's funny anywhere, yeah. Right? I mean, I don't see it being like, well, this is for the internet. It's like, no, it's funny. People are on the internet or they see it elsewhere. It's funny.
You would pass a cat video on to someone, or you would pass a funny thing on the internet?
There's no way to pass a cat video on to somebody not on the internet. I think that's why, like, if I had it, like, DVR'd and I was like, yo, come here, check this out, like, yeah, it'd still be just as funny. I think it's not like you're different online or off. Everybody has, you know, the same similar senses of humor.
Yeah. I guess the internet just lends itself more to those moments being, like, experiential for everybody as opposed to, like, not... was what I was getting at. Makes an experience. All right. Sure. Yeah, we can open it up to a Q&A now.
How many mainstream broadcasters do you find coming to you asking for advice?
Sorry, can you repeat?
How many mainstream broadcasters do you find coming to you asking for advice about what they should be doing online?
None.
Just to repeat his question, he asked, how many mainstream broadcasters come to us asking for advice?
Yeah.
No, like, TV network has ever been like, hey, dude, on the internet, what should we put on TV? I wish. That would be awesome, but...
Not about what they're putting on TV, but about necessarily how they should manifest their shows on the web, how they should use the web in a way that perhaps they're not currently.
It's people we already have business relationships with. It's not people outside of existing partnerships coming up and being like, hey, how do I do stuff online? But there are definitely companies, like, I know we work with Hulu and NBC, and they're very open to feedback about, like, how to make their player better or how to make this something that someone won't immediately skip by when they see it. But I think it's more on a user experience and in terms of functionality than it is in terms of content.
I mean, I've heard people speak about it. I think the bigger mainstream just doesn't care because it can't make them any money. I think they can make money off of it if they did a web series that was really cheap, but they'd make a small amount of money, where, you know, mainstream media is about big tales. So it's like, you'll invest a lot of money in hoping that it becomes Friends. And you rather, it's why they cancel shows that break even, because they rather keep on risking and making sure if something becomes Friends that they have Friends, because Friends, you know, will make a network $1 billion, like, easy. And so they've tried web videos, and the only way they know to make television, make video, is let's spend the amount of money we spent, and we'll just make it shorter. And I think they just don't care yet. They will slowly do, but I think they got burned. A lot of networks got burned a few years ago because they're like, everyone's on the web, we're going to make web programming, and we're going to put a lot of money into it. And then they lost a lot of money because that's just not how it works. Like, you don't make a web series by spending a television money on it. And I think they are waiting to make sure that they don't get burned again.
Yeah, I think internet ads don't pay very much money. So, you know, when Arrested Development streams on Hulu and 1 million people watch it, Fox doesn't really care because it makes them almost no money. So the only thing that TV networks are really doing on the web is making webisodes that are connected to TV shows. So you want to watch more Parks and Rec, they have webisodes with the minor characters for the diehards, and they shoot it cheaply on days off on set. The set's already there, but they're not making, like, big budget, you know, web videos, because there's no real reason for them to if it's not promoting the TV where they make their money.
Brands are kind of shifting toward being focused more on content marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys have pointed out a lot of consistent, or a lot of different things, right? We've got Angie's Leg, we've got animated GIFs, we got infographics, we got cat videos. As brands yep. are trying,
that's the internet in a nutshell, right?
That's
there.
The internet. Yeah.
What is that common thread, right? For brands who struggle to like and to develop content rapidly, right? Because you have to kind of be more opportunistic in marketing today. Like, what can we learn that's the kind of common thread that's going to be kind of a guideline that I can advise my clients?
That was a long question.
So he's basically like, what can brands learn from the things that we've found successful?
What's the common thread in
what's
all the funny
thread
things we've talked about?
So, I mean, from my perspective, it's just they're all visual things. So the internet is, a lot of people are reading the internet while at work. So it's something that they can read as a break. So there's, I mean, I say there, you either do things that people can do while working or stuff they'll read during lunch. So, I mean, my infographics are something that they can read in 5 minutes between lunch breaks. Or, I mean, I've written things that are like 2,500 words about hipsters for Splitsider that I've read almost every tweet about, and they said, it's long, but it's worth it. I mean, like, there's still room for long things on the internet, but especially for visual, I mean, for advertising, it's about visual. I mean, just in my case, I've had people contact me about making ads that are based on infographics. Like, and I think whoever that person is was particularly savvy about it. And I think there is that where you can, I mean, you can just legitimately have the content creators make your advertising. I think we, the stuff that, the car thing that we had, where that guy picked people up and drove mm-hmm. around, yeah. if you want to talk about that. What was that?
Oh, yeah. Branded content. You know, Ford basically wanted to make a web video, and they gave us a car, and then we made videos using their car, but they didn't dictate what any of the content was, and it's a way for a brand to kind of attach themselves to something funny. But I do think, like, the stuff that you were asking about, I think, like, the common thing is that the less time it takes for you to see it and understand it, get the joke, and move on, the better. So, like, you know, memes and funny pictures and GIFs, like, you can scroll through your Tumblr and see 15 of them in 20 seconds. And that's, it's like people are just on the internet, they're jumping between tabs, they're, you know, multitasking, they just want to, like, see something funny and move on. And when you see, like, a 6-minute video, most of the time people don't make it past 30 seconds. So I think just, like, the shorter, the better.
So, quick follow-up question. So would you say the goal is to make people smirk instead of guffaw?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't laugh out loud at animated GIFs. I'm like, oh, I recognize that. That was funny when I watched it 3 nights ago. And I think that's it's just like a recognition. You're like, yes, I recognize that. That was funny. I nod my head, and then I keep scrolling. I think that's honestly like Tumblr to me. At least maybe I just follow all those stupid GIF Tumblrs and entertainment Tumblrs. But it's just scrolling through and being like, yes, that is something that I like. That is something that I saw. That makes it seem really stupid.
You had in hand if you want to pass it up.
I guess my question is kind of related to that. I mean, in going back to the, you know, the main topic of what the internet finds funny, why doesn't the internet find like web series funny? Like, why doesn't the thing like what was it, the Michael and Clark, the Michael Sarah and Clark thing that he did? Like, I was kind of shocked that didn't do better than it did, because, you know, he is a guy who has an internet presence and internet likes. Like, will there be a point, do you think it could get to a point where people will watch longer stuff online, or is it just like the internet's always going to be short attention span and that's just what you're going to have to get used to?
I mean, I think longer stuff can do well on the internet. It's just a lot harder. It's hard, like, people will only dedicate a lot of time to something on the internet if they know it's really worth it, and it's got to grab you right up top. Like, a lot of web videos I see that aren't successful will take 45 seconds to get to the joke, so you know what to expect. You have to hit them almost immediately, so they're like, oh, okay, I know what to expect, I know what's coming, this is going to be funny. But if you're like, okay, there's a good credit sequence, and then there's a long preamble, nobody's going to make it through that. So I think it's just kind of that immediacy. You know, and, you know, it helps having celebrities, obviously. People are willing to give more time to stuff that they recognize, stuff they're already familiar with, so it's a harder sell for a complete unknown to get people willing to give up 5 minutes of their lunch break to watch your video.
But I do think that, you know, as things like Apple TV and, you know, these other things kind of take off, that the difference between an internet video and just like something you watch in your living room on your television that happens to have been first put out on the internet is going to, like, the difference between that is going to become smaller and smaller. You know, you can watch YouTube videos through Apple TV on your television. So people are going to start doing that more and more. Maybe the Michael Cera video was just ahead of its time. I mean, I think online video is going to move away, or people are always going to want to watch it at work during their lunch break, but it's going to become more and more something that they can also watch at home on their couch.
And I think series are, it can be harder to do a series, but once you get people invested in a series, it'll be easier for them to watch. Like, Very Mary Kate on College Humor gets like over 100,000 views every episode. They put like two out a week. There's been like 60 or 70 of them, and they still have 100,000+ views every time because people love that character and they are loyal to it. So it comes up and like, oh, awesome, another episode of this. So I think once you have established a series, it can be a lot easier and to have it be successful as opposed to a one-off web video where it's really hard if they don't know who's in it, they don't know who you are when you made it.
Is there something different about that Very Mary Kate, you think, that makes it more internet-y than some of the other web series that have failed?
I think it's just really good. She's awesome. It's really funny. It's really consistent. The production value is excellent. You know, it's just like kind of hits all those bases. I don't think there's just like one trick that it's doing. It's just like the acting is great, the writing is great, the production is great. It's on College Humor, so it has a huge distribution base. So they put it up and it's going to be in front of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people every day as opposed to something just going up on YouTube and you tweet about it, which is a lot harder to get traction. So it kind of has all the elements built into it.
Nick? Hold on, there's a mic. There's a mic.
What's kind of the opposite of your boob base for each of you? Like, what's something you posted that you felt was grossly underrated? Maybe you still try to get people to look at it. And did you learn anything from that? And do you feel over time you've gotten better at figuring out what's going to hit big or not, even if you really love it personally?
I mean, I've had things that I was like, I put a lot of effort to that died. I wrote something about the league and the nature of the psychology of male's friendship that was like pretty thoroughly researched, and it was really, really specific and really long. And maybe some people liked it, but I think it was almost a little bit too serious for a show that maybe didn't have that base yet. So that was probably the time I was like, I probably need to be a little bit snappier. I can't necessarily do everything that's as academic. And I've tried to be less academic with it, and I think I edit a column for Splitsider called Unpopular Opinions, which is people taking the opposite. And it's been really popular. It's gotten tons of comments. And a lot of the submissions tend to be a little bit more academic, or where they're just like, oh, this is like why it's really good. And I was like, make it more personal, make it more fun, and make it funnier early. Because if it's going to be long, it has to be every bit. There has to be punchlines in it, or things that are, even if it's not punchlines, funny, but punchlines like takeaway quotes.
I like posting, like, we post a lot of long, somewhat academic, or like, you know, it's about comedy, but it's looking at it in a relatively serious light, and a lot of it doesn't do great, but I think that the people who do read it and like it really like it. You know, like, I'll post a 8,000 word thing on Doug, the history of Doug, where they interview everybody who worked on Doug, and it's like, if you grew up in the 90s and you're just like, I love Doug, I grew up on this, it's really cool. It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to hit Reddit and go like wildfire and get us 300,000 views, but I do think that it breeds loyalty in the site, and people are like, oh, well, this site covers the stuff that I like in a really in-depth way, and nobody's going to read it and like every single thing on there, but I think it's worth investing in bigger pieces like that for the people who are into them.
That person. Yes.
Right.
Nice.
So the question is that when you're watching videos for all of your sites, is it, I need a, and especially when they're made videos, not so much the cat joke, but when it's like somebody made a cat joke, it's you need a home run right off the base, and then every, let's say, 22 seconds another joke in order for the series to take any ground? Or is that after the first joke and the second joke you're like, I'm done no matter how long it is?
I think when you start trying to like break something down into a formula, it's just not going to work. So I don't know. I can't really.
It also depends how good the jokes are. Like, if it's every 22 seconds, Yeah, if the formula is not going to work if the content's not there, I guess.
I mean, I always go back to laughing and hee-haw. And, you know, just the generation that doesn't know hee-haw. Hee-haw was a joke every, like, 5 minutes. They did some music acts, they did a little bit of improv, and then bang, the two girls pop up out of the corner. And laughing did the same thing, which are great old shows that most people don't know about, but it's still, there was a formula there of how they hit.
I mean, everything has a form. I mean, like, the television shows have formulas. I mean, I think 30 Rock is faster than any show that's ever came before it, and still no show is that fast. And I think there's web videos that are super fast, and there's web videos that take a little bit longer, or, I mean, things that will hit that are just going to go through the motions of the exact same joke. So one thing that's really popular on the internet that I particularly hate is there's lots of, like, videos that make fun of hipsters, and how they all work is, we're going to take a conceit, and then we're going to go through these 15 stereotypes. But they need to get the conceit, and it takes 5 seconds, and they're like, okay, stereotype one, stereotype two, stereotype three, we're getting in and out. And that's kind of, I mean, maybe that's just basic sketch writing, but it's a matter of pacing. And I think it's probably faster. You have less time to set up a scenario now in, like, online sketch writing. And I think even if you watch, if you go to Hulu Sunday morning or Monday morning, you see what SNL sketches stayed on, and which ones are more popular, because that's really interesting. A show that was created for television that now is half internet show. And you can see which ones hit, and the shows that, it are the sketches that you don't need a big explanation of the universe. It's like, here's the joke. You can see it from the screenshot and the title, and that's what works. And that tends to be what passes on. That's why the digital shorts are so big. The name of the digital short, they sing the thesis in the first word, and then that's kind of, they just heighten, right? And, yeah. I think we have time for one more question.
Thank you. Can I ask two quick ones, and then if somebody wants to answer. I was on Twitter, and I met Cheska Lee, who did this video, Shit White Girls Say to Black Girls.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know kind of what happened, because it went viral. Everybody really enjoyed it. And then, quite frankly, Perez Hilton stole it and put it up on his site. He, like, downloaded it and re-uploaded it to his site and then never gave her credit. And then it got 1.5 million views. And, you know, of course, he gets paid to, you know, put those videos up. And it, you know, went to his YouTube account. And we all, like, went at him on Twitter, like, you know, you thief, you know, you suck. And so he took it down. Yeah. And you know, he just never apologized. He never gave her any credit. He never did anything. And I was just wondering, you know, especially for someone like her and many of us, you know, we don't really have, like, the power and the, you know, the legal backing to go after, you know, someone as big as Perez Hilton in that sense. So I wanted to know what you thought about the theft of intellectual property. And relatedly, but less clear, in 2009, I started Barack's flag pin as a hashtag on Twitter, and it's basically just Barack's flag pin says everything that Barack Obama can't say, very angrily, I might add. And so it just became really, really popular, and people started requesting it, and then I ended up making it an address. And then about a month and a half ago, I started being contacted by people saying, hey, Comedy Central ripped you off, and they created, you know, angry Obama translations. And I mean, on the one hand, they have the freedom to do that, but on the other hand, there was this cultivated demand for Barack's flag pin, and if people didn't recognize the obvious similarity, they would have never contacted me about it. So I was just curious.
I mean, I would say for the first one, Perez Hilton's a scumbag, and that's really awful. Shitty. There's not much you can do about it. The fact of the matter is, somebody pulling your video and uploading it to their own thing, it's like, you can bug them, they'll take it down, but you don't really have much recourse.
I mean, if it was on YouTube, YouTube has infrastructure for it, but YouTube was created to be user-generated and user-moderated. So that means they try to do as little as possible for moderating it. I mean, she knows people at YouTube, so it should have happened pretty quickly, but yeah, that's awful.
As for the like Key and Peele thing, I think people on the internet are really quick to accuse TV of ripping them off, and I think that the hashtag might have been really popular, but I think it's a lot of people are like, SNL ripped my idea off, and here's a YouTube video, and it has 1,800 views. It's like, no, you guys had the same idea twice, and I think it's really easy to overlook that parallel thinking happens. And, you know, it's a good joke, and I'm sure other people also had the idea, but, like, you did something with it, and so did they. So I think...
But I did it way before. It was called.
But like, how can you prove that? How can you prove that they saw it? I mean, it's a Twitter hashtag, like.
Right. Well, all I can say is that I started getting some interesting emails afterwards when people started, because I didn't see it, but other people contacted me and said, "Hey, that looks very." And I mean, I'm pretty open. I'm like, "Yeah, well, people do think of the same things." And then when I saw it, I thought, I don't know, you know. And then I started getting some strange emails saying, "Hey, I heard that, you know, you think that maybe comedy's." And they started asking me, "When did you create it?" When, you know, it was like just random. And I thought, well, I wouldn't be getting these inquiries if there wasn't some type of concern.
Right. I think you have to put yourself in their shoes. And if you're a professional TV writer, what you have to lose by getting caught ripping somebody off compared to, like, these guys have been writing comedy for years. Like, they don't need to go to the internet to find their, like, you know, I just think it's, I usually err on the side of not thinking that stuff got ripped off. I think that parallel thinking happens. People have the same ideas all the time. Like, when...
It's happened to me where I've written things where there's things that have overlapped. There's things that... It's either you can't do, and I mean, there's part of it where you wish you were in that position where you had it. I mean, like, where if, but there's really, you just create more things. I mean, that's the end of the day. I mean, like, same thing at this point, there's so many people creating so much content, and everyone's tweeting jokes nonstop. Every setup that every comedian's going to have for the next 5 years, someone's already done. So we need to not be so setup based. We can't be, here's a premise, I own it. I own going to the supermarket. I own by going to the airport. It's over. Like, every the truth is hack. We have to now just be like, your job is to create something different. It's the punchline. It's not the setup. No, definitely.
I think we're
we have to wrap up. Yeah. Do you guys have anything you want to plug? What future panels?
No.
All right. I completely disagree with your notion.
That makes not much.
He completely disagrees with
the notion. Forget about it.
Listen, television steals all the time from the internet and gets away with it all the time. This is why so many people, this is why SOPA and PBR is trying to shut down the internet. Because the consequence for a lot of comedy writers stealing from the internet is nothing. And it happens all the time. You can catch that everywhere. Saturday Night Live's, like, Weekend Update jokes are, like, all...
But they're...
Do you know what the Saturday Night Live production schedule is? Those guys don't look like... They write the entire show overnight, like...
You're naive, though, thinking that they're not...
because he doesn't know anyone who works at Saturday Night Live. No, it's...
I think that you are... I think I could not disagree with you more.
I disagree with you, too. I think we're going to have to agree to disagree because the panel's now over. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, guys.